Welcome to the Community Geek Podcast, everyone. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm the head of training for Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Community Geek Podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and get all the resources mentioned in the show today at the podcast show notes. They're published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. So today I am more than thrilled to be joined by the one and only Joe Cothrell, Chief Community Officer for Lithium Technologies. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Katie.
Hello. For those that don't know, Joe is truly a pioneer in the field of online community management. He joined Lithium in 2006 as VP of Community Management Services and helped to enhance Lithium's deployment process by adding a management track that ensures their customers have all the policies, processes, and structure that they need for success. He's also played a key role in the development of moderation and social media success consulting services and has also created Lithium's first certification program. More than 300 companies on four continents have created successful social programs by following Joe's advice and guidance. So you can all see why I'm so thrilled to have him here with us today. So to go ahead and kick us off and get started, I want to chat a little bit. Joe has actually just released a new book with Dave Evans called Social Customer Experience. I believe that came out earlier this spring. Is that correct?
Yep, it came out in April.
Wonderful. So it's a great, great book. And I just would love it if you could give us a short synopsis of what readers can expect from it and what sort of insight they can expect to get.
I'd be happy to do that. So it's called Social Customer Experience, as you mentioned. And, you know, people talk about social strategies in organizations, but they generally talk about it at the tactic level, right? They talk about what you're doing on Facebook, or they talk about what you're doing in Twitter. You might have online focus groups. You might have a support community. But very few people talk about this as an overall experience, as a set of channels that happen to be social, but that complement everything else you do to reach customers. And so that's really what we tried to do, is tell that story as one story, I think, for the first time.
Yeah, I noticed. And that was what I found to be really interesting about it. As I was going throughout the book, you know, each little, you know, sort of table and call outs, there wasn't a section that was just how to use Twitter really well or how to do great things in your online community. Really, everything was brought together as kind of like one cohesive bunch and sort of underlying the fact that, you know, the technologies are great and the technologies are there and they're supportive, but ultimately it's about the people and it's about what you do with your strategy and your processes to make things better.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you kind of a little story in the background. My co-author, Dave Evans, comes at this from the social engagement side, and he's worked for years with companies on Facebook strategies and Twitter strategies and everything that happens off your domain. And as you know, I've worked for years on the community side, right? On the on-domain side. So we really did come at it from different perspectives, and it really required both of us to sort of step into the other's shoes and say, wow, how does this look at, like, from that perspective, how do these things connect? So it was really nice marriage of both of our backgrounds and experience, and I think we both came away being able to talk about it in a different way. So the tools and technologies and platforms are in there, but it sounds like we succeeded in maybe bringing them together for readers. So thanks for the good comments.
Yes, absolutely. No, I mean, that part is so important. It's so easy just to think of things really unilaterally. So appreciate that approach. But since we focus here at Feverbee on communities and Lithium focuses on communities and our listeners here are focusing on communities, how do branded online communities and especially support communities in particular play into a brand's sort of social customer experience strategy?
Well, I think it's evolved a little bit over time, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when companies were really beginning to, you know, get their arms around Facebook and Twitter, they thought that they were the same thing. And companies asked a lot, why do I need to do this if I'm already doing that? Why do I need Facebook if I have a community, or vice versa? Why do I need to be on Facebook? And I think it's because people were thinking that those off-domain channels were going to be more deeply engaging than they've turned out to be. Now, I'm not saying that they're not valuable, and I'm not saying there's not engagement there, but they're, in practice, they tend to look more like traditional awareness channels. You know, they're a great top of the funnel than they are kind of deep engagement channels. So companies sometimes beat themselves up and say, why don't we get deep engagement on our Facebook page? Well, it's because almost no one gets, Stephen, right? That isn't really what
it does.
Most people
don't even end up on Facebook pages anymore.
That's right.
As we've learned.
That's right. And even with Twitter, you know, you may have a lot of followers, but you may not get the engagement you're looking for. And you're probably not doing anything wrong. It's just that engagement tends to happen in a different place. And where it tends to happen for brands, at least, tends to be on your website. And that's how I think companies, through experience, have kind of come to understand that these are different channels with different purposes, and community is where engagement happens. And what engagement means just depends on what your customers want and what you want out of it. You know, it might be ideation for product ideas. It might be helping people use products better. Mm-hmm. It might be just bringing enthusiasts together. You know, if you're, you know, PlayStation, our oldest customer, it may be about the next console or the newest game. But that's really what it's all about. And then on the company side, it's about, okay, why are we doing this as a business? Is it making our customers more satisfied? Is it helping them, you know, buy more through that tapping into that enthusiasm? Or is it saving us money on the support side? So that's the place it occupies for most of our customers in their overall social strategy.
Oh, that makes a ton of sense. And I, especially the piece about engagement and the way people tend to engage in different type of channels. I was just thinking, I'm a Fitbit owner. I've had a Fitbit for the last couple of years, and I love Allison Leahy's Fitbit community. And so I went into the community this morning and was looking around at things, and there was a question that was posted by someone, another woman who was running and was just having this knee pain. And her description of her knee pain was exactly like the same type of knee pain that I have been dealing with for probably since the beginning of the year. I did a challenge where I was going to challenge myself to run 100 miles in 6 weeks, and I paid for it. but what I found was so interesting is that I sat there for a good 15 minutes and I wrote like a really long post. Like it was because I just felt so passionate and was like, oh my gosh, I feel your pain here. Like, let me help you. And now when I think about it, like, had I have seen, you know, maybe that like article, like the question title and a link like float through on my like Twitter feed or even on my Facebook page, I'm not so sure that I would have interacted with it nearly as much as I did when it was right there. And I mean, there's, you know, part of it is just sort of the social constructs around, you know, like Twitter and what you can do, like 140 characters. That was literally the first sentence. But you know, even on Facebook itself, like just given the way people tend to sort of behave on Facebook, I find that I tend to be a lot more reserved and I'm really careful about what I say and who I talk to and who I communicate with. But being in that community where I knew it was like this space of actual Fitbit users, and I'm like reading her entire description, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is me. I don't even know where you live, but this is me. I just felt a different sense of connection. And I think that that's my situation is not unlike a lot of other people out there. And so that's sort of, I mean, the value prop for me and the place where online communities kind of play in terms of experience. It's a place where you really have the opportunity to go deep, so to speak.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think you make a couple of really interesting points there. One is you're willing to put a little extra time into developing some advice for somebody because you realize you're creating an asset that's going to get used again and again and again.
Right.
And you don't often get that sense from other channels. You know, sometimes it just rolls off the screen and it's unclear, you know, will anybody ever be able to search for this and find it again? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to devote the time to building it. And that's one of the great things for me about community is how much, you know, reuse that is, that happens in those channels, and it encourages people to participate.
Yeah. And I mean, it could just be that I'm a community manager at heart, and so I understand the reusable aspect of it. But I think when people do know that things are going to be searched for and reused again and again, they do put a little bit more time and effort into it and are a bit more mindful about what it is that they're saying too.
I think you're absolutely right. Another aspect you mentioned about posting on Facebook, and I don't know what your Facebook, you know, following is like, but you know, everybody's on Facebook, you know, my boss, my mom, you know, my brother, my neighbor, and our customer at Sephora described this in a really interesting way. She said, Facebook is who you are, and the community is who you want to be. And what she meant by that is, you know, if you're going to give someone advice about a health issue, you may be more likely to do it in something like Fitbit based on your own experience than you might in another channel where somebody's going to pop in and say, oh, you know, you just started running a month ago or something. You know, I feel like there's an opportunity there to develop some expertise or to share some knowledge with other like-minded people without all the baggage of people thinking, you know, here's Katie and I know who Katie is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Everyone who knows your story. And also the topics are just, you know, all over the place. Like people on Facebook right now are talking about everything from the ice bucket challenge to, you know, what's happening in the Midwest and overseas and, you know, all the way down to, I think I saw something this morning of a baby elephant playing with a ribbon. So the topics are completely, you know, unfocused. And I just think it's just hard to get a lot of value there. And, you know, and that's why communities make sense for me, at least.
Yeah.
But one thing, you know, support communities, and I've been a support community manager for the last few years. And one of the things that I've struggled with is that they do tend to be quite transactional in nature. And here at Feverbee, you know, we really kind of define community by the relationships that the community members have with one another. And we really like to make sure that, you know, like community is really people interacting with one another and like, you know, sharing their strengths and weaknesses and like being vulnerable and all of that. So when you have a support community where the conversations, you know, do tend to be quite transactional, how do you go about building a stronger sense of community with what's going on? How do you go about making sure that, you know, members are getting enough value between one another and getting to know each other really well?
A couple things to say about that. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people do struggle with this. So, but I think there are a couple different perspectives on this problem. One perspective is, I think, very often in a support community, it is and should be operationally run by support folks. And I think support folks understand how to do the same thing every day to a very high level of quality. That's what they do. And they're great operationally. They don't do and they don't have the expertise that marketing folks typically do. Marketing folks don't focus on doing the same thing operationally every day at a high focus. They focus on doing different things, right? Different things this quarter, this week, this month. They focus on campaigns. They're good at generating, you know, kind of one-time interest in things. And I often think that there isn't often a close enough marriage between those two functions in communities in general, not just support communities, because I think they really need each other. You can't run a community without being operationally excellent. But also, you can't really have a true community, I think, without understanding how to generate interest and how to, you know, organize events and how to make this thing evolve and change over time. And I talk about this a little bit in my certification, which I know you've done, that almost everybody has an operational plan, but only a minority of communities have kind of what I call a tactical plan. You know, what am I going to do tomorrow, next month, next quarter that's new and that's different? And I think that communities that succeed in generating that community interest are driving it through a tactical plan. And communities that are mostly transactional, I think, have a good operational plan. And I think that's kind of what it needs. Having said that, sometimes it kind of gets my dander up a little bit when I hear people talking about transactional communities. And sometimes people dismiss it as not being valuable or not being community.
Right.
I don't believe that at all. Right. I don't believe in telling users what they should or should be doing. You know,
what you should or should be talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Why they should be getting together, what they should be doing that should be valuable. And so I think, you know, I have no confusion about whether a support community is a community. It is. But I do think there is often room for driving more engagement, more return visits, a larger group of engaged users. And maybe that's what you're talking about.
Right. I totally agree with you there. I mean, the people come to communities online for the most part because they need help, right? They're either looking for an answer to something. They want to know how someone has done something before. They want advice. They want some sort of a resource. So they're going there in order to get support. So honestly, the nature of almost all communities can really be considered support-based in that sense. And I think I agree with you that the conversation should really just be more focused around like driving additional value for those community members. Like, okay, once I have problem A resolved, you know, how can I get you to come back and want to continue talking? Maybe it's about problem A or problem B, or you taking the answer that you got for problem A and developing a relationship with someone else by sharing that knowledge. So I really think that I totally agree with you. It's like a shift in conversation that needs to happen, as opposed to saying, you know, one is better than the other, or one is more true than the other. That's not the case in any point. Communities, especially like branded communities, the shared common, you know, like a lot of communities have different shared values and shared artifacts and shared traits and that sort of thing. Well, being a customer of a particular brand or a user of a particular product or service is a very, very strong common bond, right? And so I don't think it's really fair for some of us to say whether something is or isn't a community just based off of like the type of conversations that are happening, but do agree that there can be more that needs to be done. Agreed. And absolutely support and marketing. You know, I really love it when I see companies where those two functions are working really closely with one another and working together. And that just, it's very harmonious. I think it's sort of, you can really just see like great things in the community happening when you've got both teams like working in sync with one another to get the most value for everyone. So thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate hearing that perspective. Well, I guess on that note, when you're working in a community and you're trying to work cross-functionally, organizational buy-in is huge. And it's very important, I think, in terms of guaranteeing success of the overall initiative, that you need help from a lot of different people in a lot of different places. So, do you've got any recommendations or tips about, community managers, like not just securing initial buy-in, but making sure that buy-in stays alive throughout sort of like the life of the community and the project and, you know, as the days, the months, the years go on, like how to make sure people are like still interested and still bought into what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And it's something that, you know, again, a lot of community managers struggle with. It's also a very timely topic for me because we're working on our community manager certification too. So mm-hmm. we're going to have a certification that comes after the first one we've done for the last 3 years. Okay. And one of the topics is called business transformation. And this kind of relates to the desire of a community manager to work across the function and really understand their own role in trying to help their company become, you know, more socially aware, more of a social business, you know, using those insights across the business. So, you know, what we typically talk about is, you know, you obviously need to build relationships with other functions, mm-hmm. but you can't do it by yourself. You do need help from the person who you work for. Nothing happens cross-functionally in organizations really unless the people responsible in those functions actually agree among themselves that this kind of interaction is important and meaningful. And I always say, you know, sometimes people say, well, I'm going to pick my community manager because this person's been with the company for 10 years and they know everybody and, you know, they have good relationships and they can kind of make things happen. I always say, you know, I'd hate to be that community manager, right? You know, because it's like, who wants to be running your operation based on personal favors all day long?
It's a little stressful.
Yeah. You know, I think you have to work with your boss to basically say, look, I need you to negotiate some relationships. I'll make them work, but I need you to kind of go and pave the way for me. And, and I think that's part of it. Don't think that you can do all of it yourself. You definitely need some support. I've been thinking about this actually in a slightly different way lately for this new community manager certification. And I've been thinking that it's also important to understand where you are in different ways your company is making this transformation. You probably know mm-hmm. in some organizations, social is bottom up, right? People who are on the front lines kind of get it and they start doing it and then they try to bring everybody along. Mm-hmm. And other organizations are middle, what I call middle out, which generally is the head of a function or executive or a senior manager in a function, like support, says, I think it's important. Company may not get it. We're going to start and we're going to make it happen. We're going to try to bring everybody along. And then other organizations are top down, where really, I mean, this never happened 10 years ago, but it's starting to happen more and more. You know, the CEO, executive leadership, says, why aren't we doing the things everybody else is doing? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to understand, if you're a community manager, what kind of organization am I in? You know, because if it is top down, there may be things available to you that you don't have. You know, for example, if it's top down and not middle out, you know, you may not want to try to engage higher levels if your boss may not be bought in yet.
Right.
So I think it's you know, you really can get yourself, I think, in trouble and get into a lot of frustration if you don't really understand where are we in this social journey and what can I do to help. And so yeah. I hope by the time I deliver this certification in September, I'll have lots of good insights insights on how to do that.
But. Oh, I'm sure you will. No, I think it's hugely important. And I think too, with more and more companies out there hiring community managers, especially big, big organizations, big enterprises, you know, getting assimilated into a company and starting a new job is pretty hard. It's something that, like, it's always been, it's hard to get comfortable with the culture and to figure out your place and where you go. And I think maybe, you know, there should almost, for a community manager, to be like a new job checklist, right? Where you're like, okay, find out these people, find out who these people are, and then like the whole find out where you sit sort of thing.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Like, maybe we'll build that. To have sort of something like, what are the questions that you ask yourself to sort of identify where you sit? Because, you know, in some companies where, you know, there's not even like an org chart and you're trying to figure out who is who by going into your office address book and looking at people's job titles. You know, that happens. It's realistic. And so, you know, I think if there's any way to help community managers just sort of better figure out where they're at, that so that they don't make those types of mistakes, can only help people move forward even further. But very, very important piece is to know where you're at and where you sit. And, you know, it's almost like a game of chess in a way, right? To figure out who's bought in and who's into it and who's not. And if they're not into it, how can you get them into it? It's very, very crafty, I would say.
Well, and I think, I mean, you've lived and breathed this, right?
Yes.
And if you haven't been in a medium or large organization, to me, this is part of what enterprise community management is all about. And it's very different than if you're at a startup or you're at a small business or you're at an association or a university. You know, there are some commonalities, but I do think this practice of enterprise community management is as much about managing the internal community as it is managing the external community.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think, you know, I've worked in startups and then in sort of medium-sized enterprise. And at startups, like the community and the community manager can almost easily become like the heart of the business in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know every single person, you know everyone's name, you kind of just become this sort of like hub. But whereas, you know, when you have to scale that, like it can't just be you in order for the company to grow. Like, you have to be able to scale. And so much of it is through relationship building and understand the different parts and the different roles that people play. And knowing when to ask for help and who to ask for help is hugely important piece of that.
Yep.
So totally agree with you there. Well, I guess, you know, related to that, how would you go about sort of building those skills if you aren't comfortable with, you know, going out and developing relationships? Totally agree that, you know, your boss should provide some cover and help you in terms of like initiating the conversations and kind of paving the way for it a little bit. But then once that happens, it's on you to nurture the relationship and keep it going. And I think that the concept of sort of influence and relationship building is hugely important to successful community management, but it's not something that often gets a lot of conversation or airtime. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the very best tools I've ever seen a community manager use for doing just this very thing is a newsletter. And I know it sounds simple.
That sounds great.
And sometimes people get it wrong. They think the newsletter is all about what we're doing with the community and, you know, who we are as a community team, et cetera. The effective community newsletters that I've seen are really newsletters about the community itself, what they're saying, what they're excited about, what they're unhappy about, what new things they're talking about maybe today than they were yesterday. Mm-hmm. I actually first encountered this with eBay years ago. Mm-hmm. And more and more companies are doing this, community managers that I work with. EA had a fantastic newsletter. We've got a number of customers where community managers are doing this. And so they publish this newsletter. And then they send it out to sort of friends, but they include in the bottom of it, if you'd like to get this newsletter, please send me an email. So you're not, you know, blasting people with it. You're just mm-hmm. basically saying, if you care about what you're reading in this newsletter, let me know and I'll add you to the list. And because it's focused on what customers are saying, it's not so much focused on, you know, what we're doing in the community, you find almost everybody cares. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of communicating to the organization that you have this 24-hour two-way conversation with customers going on every day.
Yep.
You know, which I think that automatically gets you attention because most people don't. There are many people in organizations never talk to a customer.
No, it's true.
So I think that can be one tactic among many. And you, maybe even if you don't have those kind of interpersonal skills to develop it, it might be a nice way to sort of introduce yourself without having to call somebody on the phone and put it out there. So.
Oh, exactly. The newsletter is a really cool idea. You know, product managers and engineers always love to know what people are saying and what they're thinking about the product, but especially for engineers, they're most always not customer facing. And product managers, it sort of just depends. Sometimes they are and sometimes they're not. And so, right. But every product manager I've ever stumbled across, even if in my head I had like the misconception, like, oh, they don't really care. And if I casually mention or, you know, post something on like whatever the internal, like something like a chat or whatever internal collaboration tool, I've found that people are really, really interested in it. And I think that the cadence of a newsletter and like that repetition is kind of key, right?
That's
one of the biggest best practices about audience building is like repetition is key. Keep it going at the same time, the same place. And that the same thing plays in, you know, with a newsletter in the organization as well. And I think in making something like that successful, I always love, you know, technologies. It's kind of hard to write a whole bunch of things off the fly, but you could easily open up like a free like MailChimp account or something like that just for your newsletter and set up your own template and then just go in and kind of fill in the content blocks every day. And then it's like your, you know, one of your mailings each week is to your internal teams to let them know what's going on.
Yep. And then you just add to your moderator's tasks a set of criteria for identifying things that might be included in that newsletter so that while they're looking at everything, they're flagging some links for you that you can review maybe once a week.
Exactly.
And send it out.
Yep. That's a great idea too, because it's, you know, it can easily take hours just going through and trying to find like the right content here and there. And having moderators help in tagging or handing stuff over to you is very important as well. All right. Well, this has been really, really insightful. Thanks so much for the time. I think before we start to wrap things up here, I have one last question for you. If you could travel anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is my last question.
I travel a lot.
You do. You are all over the world.
Constantly. We opened an office in Singapore about a year ago. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, probably been 2 years ago now, so I'm out in Asia a lot too. But to be honest with you, my absolute favorite city is a city I've been to a million times, but I never get tired of it, is London.
Oh.
And I don't know why, but if I have a choice to travel someplace out of the country, I would love to spend a weekend in London. It's just one of my favorite cities in the world. You know, a little bit like New York, but but it's more of a world city and great culturally, and I'm, you know, familiar with it now, so I navigate it fairly well. And I know that's not an exotic answer, but that's
wonderful. Next time when you're in London, you're gonna have to go catch up and have a pint with Richard Darren, because they're both based in London as well.
You know, we've tried to connect a couple times and we haven't, but I'm sure one day soon we will.
One of those days it'll work out. Well, no, that's really great. I was in London earlier this year and I went last year too, and it's just, it's beautiful. I love it.
It's a fun place.
It really is. And everyone, it's just, it's so nice to see different parts of the world like that. So very cool. Awesome. Well, Joe, thank you so much again for your time. If you like this episode, make sure you visit communitygeek.com/podcast to review the show notes. Over there, I will include Joe's Twitter handle as well as links to all the different other resources we mentioned today, including his book, which I highly recommend. And thanks so much for listening, everybody. I hope you have a great rest of the day wherever it is you are. Take care.